for so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, the commish only said...
We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it...
But no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself.
When Black Friday comes,
this is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up. Mm-hmm. Looks okay. The world survives into another day.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Ah, can't find it? We can help.
This here is 1240.
1240?
It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah, plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's the Joe Beaver Show.
Inbound pass to Pope. 10 seconds to play. One timeout remaining. Pope into the front court. Beavers could win it with a hoop. Pope goes left. Jordan, a step back three for the win. Good! He hit it, and the Beavers win.
I'm surprised you even have a voice.
Well, it's good morning, John. It's hard. It's been a hard, long, cold, hard, lonely winter that was elevated last night. Brilliant shot by Pope. Mm. A scene of joy at Gill. Mark Radford will join us. He played in some of the great games in Oregon State history for great teams. We've been celebrating Oregon State basketball all week long, lamenting the loss of Rob Holbrook, one of the great players on those great teams, 79, 80, 80, 81, and 81, 82 for Rob. Mark Radford finished his career after the 81 season. But it felt somehow appropriate last night, John, that in the midst of this sense of celebrating the brand, the richness of the history of Oregon State basketball, that these guys in this time, under some difficult circumstances of late where they didn't play well, mm-hmm. by everybody's admission and everybody's acknowledgement, it was a bad trip to the mountains in terms of the basketball play and getting blown out twice.
Yeah.
To have that and to be able to come back, and I could tell in sitting down with the coaches yesterday and watching the shoot-around that they were locked in, that they somehow found a way to get that out of their system and come back and lock in and focus on a game plan that they executed beautifully against a great team. And
yeah.
Bill Walton is a I think occasionally he engages in hyperbole. I mean, it's possible that he does.
Just a little.
But he's not wrong when he says Arizona not only could win the Conference of Champions, they can win this conference, they can win the national championship. I think they're that good. I think they have all the pieces and parts to play a variety of styles, physicality, speed, shooting, defense. They're really good.
They are.
The number three team in the country, according to the KenPom rankings, number three. And the Beavers, they played well, too. It wasn't like they were throwing it all over the court or playing poorly. They gave the Beavers a good shot. They were locked in and focused. John, it was one of the more surprising, satisfying, joy-eliciting victories I've seen in the building.
Well, one factor, too, is the guy that hit the game winner and had 5 of 8 from three-point range was not playing well of late. He had a couple
right.
games in
That's
single
right.
digits.
7 and 10 on the recent trip.
Yeah, that, I mean, really, really uncharacteristic for Jordan Pope. So he comes up with 31 big ones. He shoots a great percentage from beyond the arc, and Tyler Bilodeau goes for 80% from the floor. I mean, that's incredible, but to say that they can win the whole thing, that's great. But outsiders are going to go, yeah, but they lost to Oregon State and they lost to Stanford.
Right. They lost to Stanford 100-82.
At
I suppose.
Home.
No, that was,
was
in Palo Alto.
Okay.
Excuse me. They haven't lost at home. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, and we have open phones now, if you want to jump in with anything about last night's game. And I'm looking, in a sense, we'll have for candor from how you experienced the game, because I've had a number of texts today from friends and Beaver believers and people that care, but things like, I turned it off at halftime, because even though I liked the way we were playing, I knew down eight with that team, Arizona, and the Beavers kind of turned it over a couple of times near the end of the half. Instead of closing the gap, they're down eight. So I've had two different texts suggesting that they were tired, late game, Beavers down eight, turned it off, and awoke to the joy. Now, I've had that. I've had other people. I had somebody call and tell me, down eight, turned to watch a show with his wife on Netflix.
Forgot about
and
it?
And didn't so much forget, but just kind of, well, I'll look in.
See what the final is.
And well, not even, it was still... They were watching some show, he said, called Louder Milk, which I've never heard of. But anyway, Netflix, Louder Milk, he told me it was funny. I know nothing about it. I don't know if it's about the singer-songwriter, whom I like, John Louder Milk, but I'd watch it if it was about him. Anyway, he says he's watching Louder Milk, and he checks his phone, 68-68. He goes, honey, we're going back to the game. She said, okay. So they get off the Netflix streaming show.
Well, I think anybody would do that.
Come back to the game, watches the Beavers go up 77-68 on three straight threes. Looks like the game's over and the place is pandemonium. Moments later, I see a four-point play. Mm. And I think, okay, we're still in the fight. I mean, you still had to fight to win it. And they got caught and then still won it on Pope's magnificent
three. Well, that's key, that they didn't just completely buckle. I don't understand leaving an eight-point game at halftime. Because I do get the whole predict and you can, it's going to collapse. Absolutely understand that. But you got to wait for the collapse, because eight isn't completely.
Eight's not.
It wouldn't take you long if you waited under normal circumstances. Be like, okay, this one's over. Down by 18, let's say, with 3 minutes into the second half.
Right.
I get that. But eight, I would have hung around. I, on the other hand, was absolutely out, flat, fast asleep at
halftime.
Well,
you get up at 3:30.
I get up at 3:30. So I knew... I'm gonna be waking up to either what I expect or a great
glorious
unbelievable thing, and it's so cool. And it's so cool that it was Arizona, because that's become a thing now. Dougie was saying this morning on the air that he goes, I read an article from an Arizona paper about how they need to be careful with Oregon State, because Oregon State just happens to upset top 10 ranked Arizona teams over the
years.
They
have, and it's been interesting. They've done it in every decade from the 80s. The Beavers have a victory, and we had somebody trying to call the Downward Dog phone line, and we appreciate that. It's just the two of us, to coin a phrase, in the room. And your call's coming in now. John went to get you, whoever you may be. And you hung up because you were tired of waiting for somebody to answer the phone. But when John and I are engaged in dialogue, it is difficult at times to, you can't keep talking and answer the, and say, hey, well, Mike, what I thought was, good morning, Joe Beaver Show. What I thought was, what's your name?
I've come close.
I know, we do that. I mean, it's kind of the way it works in the world. Whoever this is, we're going to put you on before we break. We appreciate the call. We'll have further open phone opportunities as we go today. We will have Mark Radford, John Wilner. And the thing with Wilner is, not only can we talk about his recent column on the Pac-12 hotline, and John does such a great job. Really, this is all be our first time since talking to him, since our San Jose State season opening win in football.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. Get an update from him and the fine column that he wrote about the hand that Barnes, Chun, Schultz and Murphy have played and played so skillfully. Still don't know how it's all going to come out. There's still, the game isn't completely over. But so far with the bad hand, they're alive. And they've played that hand extremely well. We'll talk about that with John. But also, he follows everything. So we'll be able to say, hey, John, how about that last night? I'm sure he watched, because he writes and follows basketball very closely. So we'll get John's perspective on that, too. But it's Mark Radford, John Wilner, and we hope for Pope, the man of the hour, when the Beaver practice comes to an end. I've gotten word to Stevie. I've gotten word to Roberto, to Trevor Kramer. Jordan came by last night, and while Mike Retai was on, And I didn't plant a seed then, but I'm just hoping. We don't get men's hoopers because of their practice, but they're going to close practice a little early today instead of 1 or 1:15. We hope around 12:45.
Oh,
so we're going to hope for Pope to talk to the young man about his transcendent game and shot and the fact that he said to Bill and Roxy, I think that's the first time I've ever had a game winner at the buzzer in his life.
Wow.
And what a great time to do it. So that's what's in store for the show today. It has been a celebration of Beaver hoops all week, and it was perfect, the perfect pitch and moment to rise up with that kind of effort in front of an enthusiastic student crowd, an audience featuring Bill and Roxy on the call on the Pac-12 networks. And we hope along the way to get texts and calls from you as to how you took it in, and maybe even some of you were dubious about coming or even watching just because of the recent trends, how things have been going. You didn't expect the Beavs not only to win, but not even to be in it, maybe, was your mindset. Mm-hmm. They're going to get this great team could blow their doors off, and yet here they are, beating Arizona. They've done it in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and now the 2020s knocked off a top 10 Arizona team.
Last chance killer, right?
And the last chance
home,
for a
anyway.
While,
yeah.
anyway. Let's go to Dan in Beaverton before we break and come back with the great Mark Radford. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Kind of funny. I wasn't optimistic at all watching the game. And normally I get a group of people together and we have some fun. But instead, we were sharing text. And I'll have to be honest, some of the texts were not very positive early.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking about you and your predictions about the zone defense. I mean, man, did we give up the baseline and inside shots and potential dunks. And
yeah.
It was pretty much an embarrassment. And but we just kept trading some sarcasm, hung in there, and next thing you know, we're only down by 8 points. And then all of a sudden, Bilodeau and Pope and the rest of the team, they just caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just unbelievable. And able to overcome some of their defensive lapses and some of their mental mistakes, it was just a fantastic finish.
Dan, it really was. And some of those things, you know, those baseline drives and drives to the hoop and dunks and so on that you're referring to, Walton himself, I went back. That's one of those games where when you win, I don't care how tired I am, and I was beat, and it's been a busy and exhausting kind of week, but I went home and I watched most of it. And at one point, I think Pella Larson drove along the base and dunked in the first half. And Bill said, Ralph Miller and Slatsgill are swiveling in their rocking chairs right now, or something to that effect that made me laugh. And I thought, yeah, he's right. That wasn't a good look. But the thing I was proud of the guys, and you touched on it, Dan, Wayne told me before the game, he said, we've got to score with them. They're going to score. They're really good. We can't expect to beat them in the 50s like Wayne did in his first year when Sean Miller brought a top seven team in. The Beavers won that 58-56. He said, this game will be different. We're going to have to make shots. We're going to have to be able to score with them. And it was clear right from the start, Dan, even in falling behind by up to as many as 12, didn't it feel that the Beavers were scoring at a pretty good clip, enough to keep you kind of hoping that they could stay in the game and maybe even be in there in the final minutes?
Yeah, I mean, every time you'd think, okay, we're losing by 12, it's going to go to 20,
mm-hmm.
and then they close the gap and
mm-hmm.
make a few nice plays to just stay in range, and then something caught fire with the fellas, and man, it was, and that last shot was just unbelievable.
It was a thing of, excuse me, it was pure, it was beautiful, it was just a, it wasn't a wild clank bank in shot falling out of bounds. It was an absolute miracle. It was a very good basketball play and design. The way Wayne had it set up, drawing people away, you had to, Bilodeau and Rattai were shooting it well enough that they had to be honored. So as they come to the right of the floor, the defense couldn't stack. They didn't set a pick. You know, I mean, it wasn't a ball screen. Jordan Pope singled
right.
up by there. I mean, there was room for him to maneuver. It was a very good play call on Wayne's part to not call the timeout, put the ball in the hands of their best guy, who was red hot, and let him finish. And he created a beautiful, pure shot.
Yeah, the fadeaway that did look like Lillard was just incredible. And the celebration afterwards was so much fun on TV.
Yeah.
It was just pure joy. It was just great.
Absolutely, Dan. And a moment, a sweet moment, I think, magnified by the tough times that the programs had in the mountain trip and some of the tough seasons here of late. To have that kind of game in that moment, the students swarmed the court, a celebration that was indeed joyous. It really felt good. It was alive and well and fun to be a part of last night. And I'm hoping we hear from more people that either watched it or were there or had a feel for how special it was, because, Dan, you know it really was.
It was fun. Thank you so much, guys. And let's hope the momentum keeps up.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
I just saw it on social media. Somebody's personal video of it, not television.
Oh.
From a great angle. It was great.
That's tremendous. Yeah. I'm glad. You know, the kids, I noticed kids out on the floor while they're celebrating last night, all had phones out, so they're capturing the celebration that they're right in the middle of. And Big Bill is a beloved figure, and I'm glad. Here's something I'm really glad about, John, that what we're going to hear, I hope, later today from Dave from Tumwater, who had a really inspiring sort of one-on-one.
Just he got to meet.
Yeah, they visited, and Dave will recount the experience later, we hope, when we have some more open phone opportunities. But I'm heartened by, as I know you are, you know, when I say to Mikey Kane, boy, you feel to that position like Brooks Robinson, and he gives me the blank look. And I know he doesn't quite know, and I talk to Mikey's father later, your son doesn't know, Brooks Robinson, I failed as a parent. Yes, you have, as a matter of fact. No, but to see the students at our place, and now maybe it's because Bill is on the Pac-12 networks, and there's enough of those people, the young kids, who care about the Beavers and the Pac-12, so they watch the games on the network and thus have a feel. But to see the line of people after the game, young kids,
really?
A lot of people coming over to get his autograph. I don't know if any of you were part of that. There was Paul Miller came and visited. I noticed as Bill was leaving the floor that Paul Miller, who went 8-for-10 in the 61-57 victory to start the Bruins on their last weekend, Paul and Bill were talking. So that's a little older generation, sorry, Paul, than the students at Oregon State who were also lined up to get his autograph. But I just thought it was a perfect storm last night of, here's Bill coming into Gill, waxing eloquent about the Gill Coliseum. I love Corvallis. I love this town. To have it all come together the way it did was beautiful.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm glad to hear that Dave got to meet him.
We'll talk more. We'll hear from Dave himself about that. Up next, as part of this continuing celebration of Oregon State basketball, Mark Radford, who has helped with Roberto Nelson to kind of rally a lot of the great old guard to come down and honor Ann Harper. Mark was friends and teammates with the late Rob Holbrook. There's a lot of things to talk about with Mark Radford. He's coming up next with John Wilner, and we hope for Pope at about 12:45 later today. Great to have you with us on the Joe Beaver Show. We have had a special week here on the Joe Beaver Show. Honored to be joined by the likes of Jim Jarvis, Mel Count, Ray Bloom, Bill McShane, other guests who have helped us to understand a little bit better about the great Final Four team and the life of Ann Harper, 95 years young, still living in the house that Bill and Ann had built by Ivan Gilder in 1965. Ann's still there on her own. Beautiful.
It's been a combination week because we've been learning a lot about the 63 team. And the 81 era, not just the team, but the era because of
the sad passing of Rob, but Ann's life.
And Ann's life, which will, again, be celebrated tomorrow. So it's been great.
And behind the scenes and helping to make it all happen, we talked to Ray a little bit, who made a call to Mark upon running into Kim and Jim Hoover in Corvallis. And the word, just this groundswell of momentum to say, hey, we love Ann Harper. And we need to do something for her. Mm. And the guys have rallied, and Mark's been behind that with great help from Roberto Nelson and kind of beginning to rally some of the great old guard of Oregon State hoops up. And Mark Radford, who was at the USC game with some former teammates and Oregon State luminaries, kind enough to join us here on the Joe Beaver Show. Mark, good morning. Thanks for your time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously excited after that great game last night. Gee.
How about that, Mark?
I was
going to ask you if you watched, you know, the entire thing. I mean, that was a thing of beauty that fits right in this celebration of Oregon State basketball. That's, you had a lot of moments, big wins along the way in your own life, which we'll talk to. But what did that mean to you to watch the way those guys played last night?
Yeah, well, it's a process, and it's always good to get those rewards. It's something that you obviously build for, and then you realize, and it was sort of, it came to us as freshmen, that you can, you know, you can hang with the best, and that you're capable and you have the ability. And so that's an important aspect of it, because you just, you know, you have your doubts. They've had some terrible losses. We did too our freshman year. And you sort of go, well, hey, you know, we're going to learn from these mistakes. We're going to learn from these losses. And they've won some close games. So, you know, they're capable, but it's a good reward for the effort, and so it's, you know, for their future, which is a little different now with the transfer portal. It's a great opportunity for this core group to unite and see that hard work is paying off.
Mark, in your time, and you know, maybe this win can be the kind of spur that you're talking about, but you guys built into the magnificent back-to-back Pac-10 champions in 80-81, which you were a starter and an integral part of. But in those earlier years, 78, 79, was there a game or two or a breakthrough where you guys, oh, okay, yeah, we can hang, we're good, we're going to be really good? Was there a moment or two along the way before you guys actually did rise to the top of the conference?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, UCLA was the mainstay, and they were the sort of the benchmark. But in the preseason, playing North Carolina and North Carolina State, we played Georgia Tech or Wake Forest. I can't remember. We played the Russian Olympic team, and those were huge losses, but great opportunities to see what good teams look like and how they behave. And so we were able to do that. And so we, you know, it was a process. And after, I'm trying to think, our breakthrough games, I don't think we necessarily had a breakthrough game. What we had was learning to win close ones, mm-hmm. by not making mistakes, by not beating yourself. And so it, for us to sort of develop, that was the first thing. Well, we just got a place that we don't beat ourselves, and let's let the chips fall where they do. But by keeping the games close, and I felt like Oregon State did that last night. They didn't have that big blowout moment where they went down 20. Mm-hmm. They had dry spells, but they always sort of hung and kept it close, and then let the chips fall. And they got hot, hit some big threes. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and we'll talk about one player and the other players too. Rattai, Bilodeau hit big shots, but Jordan Pope was transcendent last night. I want to get your thoughts about him here in a moment. But one other thing about your own experiences building up to the greatness that you and your teammates experienced. You played Magic in the Far West Classic in 78. What do you recall about that? That game was competitive and close, wasn't it? And what do you remember about playing against him in the Coliseum?
Well, I recall the length they had in most positions and their sort of a matchup zone, which we hadn't seen before with such great athletes. So mm-hmm. it's sort of the combination of a unique style of defense and size across the board, you know, played havoc on us early. And by the time we sort of settled in, figured it out, it was too late. You know, we could not ever make any progress. It was sort of a 8, 10, 12, 14 game, and we could never make a run. We could, a lot of it is they had a real good point guard in Donnelly, and obviously Magic is the historic point guard. We couldn't ever pressure him enough for him to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. He could see over us. He could hold us off with his length. He could turn his back to us. We couldn't really, some of our strengths of trapping and getting turnovers, we couldn't do it. It didn't happen. Now, we might have to play him a couple more times and go, okay, we got him figured out now. But in that one game, no, they owned us.
That's interesting. Hey, Mark, this is John with Mike. But did he seem to be a who's that guy? Like, did you know that he was going to be as great as he became, or was he just another player? I know he had Gregory Kelser on that team that was huge in the championship game against Bird, but what about Magic, and you're playing against this guy that is bigger than life?
Well, it's funny you say that, because it was a situation where in the summer, it was the first time I'd ever played in an AAU tournament, and I usually just played in the park, and I had done one camp with Marv Harshman at UW, so I had some experience with playing with other players. But there was a group out of Brewster Packing, out of Brewster, Washington, and it had Ainge, Stout, myself, and a bunch of his friends. The team of this apple grower had a team, and he wanted his son to play and a bunch of his buddies. But they recruited Stout and Ainge and myself, and we went to this tournament in Florida. And I don't know if I've ever told the story, but no. Jeff can tell it well. And we were about to go to the final, and we've got sort of a home court hose job by the host team, and we end up losing at the buzzer. But the championship we would have played would have been against Magic. But we had the opportunity to watch him play, and we were all astonished because we had never seen anything like him. And all the things he were doing, we had never seen. High fives, we hadn't seen lob passes, we hadn't seen people patting each other on the butt, kind of this whole persona that he had it in high school. And so when he saw that, I was trying to tell people back in Portland, you wouldn't believe what I saw. I saw a spaceman from outer space. I've never seen anything like it. It was incredible. And so, unfortunately, we didn't get to play them in the final game, but I had seen him. I knew, you know, what he was capable of, and that energy that you can't even quantify. So I wasn't surprised. But I was more surprised at their length and their size. And it was similar to a situation in high school when we played North Eugene in high school. You know, they're all 6'5". It's a whole team. Yeah. And it plays havoc on you when you have that sort of lineup.
Yeah, and one of the
untraditional.
Hey, that's a great story, Mark. Thanks for sharing it with us. So you mentioned Stout and Ainge, and you guys are teammates. Did you ever think in that whole, I've talked to Danny a little bit here and there over the years about the recruiting process. I know, I mean, you guys were close, right? I mean, did you ever feel like there was a chance that Ainge might be part of that same group and come to Oregon State?
Well, if I had to, this isn't official, but I always felt they kind of kept an opening for Ainge and hoped that he would sign. And so they sort of had a holdout scholarship opportunity for him, and he sort of delayed and waited and waited, and I think they held out hope.
Yeah.
And that might be the only reason I was really late to the party, and that might be the only reason. So when he finally decided, they still had an opportunity, and I was dragging my feet. So I wish. So when we played in that tournament, I think Ainge averaged 32, Stout averaged 30, and I might have averaged 28. Or, you know, we all shared the ball. We didn't have any plays. We figured out how to play with each other, and it was just basketball, right? It wasn't anything that we weren't capable of. So it would have been unique. It would have been, that would be beyond my wildest dream to play with Ainge, because he's a winner. That guy is a winner. That would have been wonderful. But
Mark,
I might have missed out. I might have been the odd man out.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, you never know, right? When a decision's made, how much it affects so many other things. But so
exactly.
It's fun to think about a little bit, but why were you dragging your feet, so to speak? What were sort of your options as you were waiting to make a decision?
You know, that's a good question. I'm pretty slow on these decision-making, and I just, you know, the more these coaches laid it on heavy at the end, the more confused I got. And I mean, I was sold on the Pac-8. I was sold on Ralph Miller, and my coach went to Oregon State, Tom Jones. So it was natural, but I don't know. It was a tough decision. You know, all these coaches made it sound so good. And so, no particular reason. Jimmy, he did his part, that's for sure. He was there.
Yeah.
You know, he went to every event I'd ever done. He seemed to be everywhere for everybody. So.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of them. It was me. I'm just a slow decision maker sometimes.
Okay.
Mark, we had Ray on yesterday, and I didn't get a chance to ask him this, but we did kind of touch on it a little bit, and as we're right now the things that we're discussing is interesting. So the follow-up is, how much involvement did Ralph have on each individual recruiting thing? Was it Jimmy saying, Ralph, that we got to have this guy, and then he says, okay? Or did he, because, you know, you see things like the Prefontaine story where Bowerman would not recruit a kid at all, and Prefontaine holds out for Bowerman to talk to him individually. What about with the great mystical Ralph Miller, and as far as recruiting goes, how much did he play a role?
Well, I mean, he was sort of the closer in a sense, but he had no, you know, he just didn't have to sort of cater to a young player, right? He just didn't think much of anybody for the most part. Right. I don't think I was one of those players, and I've heard Richard Washington say different. Mm-hmm. Obviously some players he might have softened it up in his tone and his rhetoric. But for the most part, you know, he just didn't. That wasn't his strength, was recruiting. So, I mean, he kind of came at the end, and you knew he was there. But, I mean, if you hear Stoutow, I mean, you wouldn't think that he wanted you. I mean, he really didn't. Jimmy would have to come in later and go, no, you don't misunderstand that. This is how he is, and mm-hmm. he really wants you. So it could have been a confusing message for most. Thanks to Jimmy.
Well, and those two together, I mean, without Jimmy, a lot of you guys don't come, and the things that you did together don't happen. So Jimmy, bless his heart, he's a great man and a great Beaver. And, you know, he's still so much a part of the richness of Oregon State history, and I know you guys all revere and honor that man. Ray told us a story yesterday, Mark Radford, our guest, that made us laugh out loud when he said, when Ralph finally did come to see Ray play, Ray was a postman for Park Rose, playing inside. Ralph just kind of said, Jimmy, what do I want this guy for? He's a 6'4 big man. What am I going to do with him? You know, that type
right,
of thing.
Exactly.
And then Jimmy had to be the guy to say, wait a minute, Ralph. Right? I mean, in a sense, Jimmy sold a lot of you guys onto Ralph. Is that true?
I think so. I just don't think Ralph was necessarily going to be watching and going to games. It just wasn't, you know, he would show up. I think Stout told the story. He showed up for 5 minutes and left. I've seen enough. Yeah, I like him. You know what I mean? He just wasn't, he just wasn't one of those gym rats. You know, some guys are just in the gym. Coaches love it. That wasn't him. So he needed Jimmy for sure. It wouldn't have happened without Jimmy. No question.
And yet, when you said maybe recruiting Mark wasn't his strength, do you pause and give him credit for being a teacher of the game and a developer of systems and fundamentals, maybe to a fault? We've talked about this before. But what about Ralph as a coach and teacher of the game?
Well, that's exactly, it was his style, you know, and I talked to Roberto about that. And so, the practice was the classroom, the game was the test. And I wouldn't say he was an X and O guy that when you took the test, he wasn't going to help you, just like your teacher. You go take the test, the game will be the result. And we'll work on it, you know, all your mistakes you made, we'll work on them in practice. You win, lose, we're going to work on them in practice, that's for sure. And so we'd win by 30, but he still would feel like we flunked the test, you know, and, you know, I'm going to have to work on this. And, you know, so that was, he wasn't that kind of coach. When the game started, he's going to just take over and say, okay, we're going to change this now. Let's go do this, mm-hmm. do that. No, here's what we brought to the table. You're taking the test. And so, yeah, that's how we did it based on my.
And it sounds like, collectively, you guys didn't need to be coddled. Like we hear a lot about kids today, they'll transfer at the drop of a dime, but you guys are going through all of this together and you didn't need to be coddled.
Well, yeah. Again, the whole era, it is different. You know, it was much more militaristic back then, and that's how, you know, they would break you down and build you back up. So, but yeah, it's totally different. No difference in parenting, right? You know, at 18, they'd give us our luggage and say, see you later.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's just totally different.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Last couple of things with Mark Radford. Mark, we could talk all day with you about so many things, but you mentioned Roberto. And you told me at the USC game, when I said, Mark, it's great to see you here, you pointed to Roberto on the floor and said, it's that guy. Look at that guy. Tell me what you how much you've appreciated what Roberto's doing and what it kind of means to all of you to kind of be rallied back together again like we're going to see you Saturday, tomorrow.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, I think not that there's anything wrong with the, you know, with the coach's style or a technique. It's just more of an intimacy, a brotherhood with an ex-player. And I just think that was part of the missing link. And I think we just needed that connection so that we felt like, and I get it, where if I were a coach and coming in, you know, you appreciate the history and the success, but also, like when I played for the Sonics, you've got this sort of championship era hanging over your head of like, why can't you produce what they did? You know, they won a championship, and you know, meeting that standard every year was difficult. It's a challenge. So I can kind of get both sides of that, where they want us around, but I don't think we can replicate that. You know, it's just too tough. Mm-hmm. I don't want to remind us of being number one. It's difficult.
Yeah.
And so I don't fault anybody. And, you know, we've all gotten busy with our lives, and it's one of those things. So it's a breath of fresh air to have a sort of invigorated ex-player involved. So I pushed hard for that because I felt like that was the only sort of missing link. Not that they have to be number one and be the best in the planet. That's hard to do, achieve. And how they did it with us would be hard to do today.
Mm-hmm. I get that. Hey, Rob Holbrook, it's stunning news to Ray.
Yeah.
I don't know how close, Mark, over the years you stayed with Rob, but you guys have a bond and brotherhood forever. So just tell, what are your thoughts about your teammate, friend, Rob, and just your reaction to the sad news?
Yeah, that is, you know, and it is sad. And that's part of sort of our mortality that I wanted to, you know, bring to everybody's attention prior to that, why we should be getting together.
Mm-hmm.
He's excluded himself quite a bit. I hadn't spoken to him in a while, and we would have these different events that I have to credit Charlie would always sort of be the impetus for that. Steve did one, and Ray's been involved. We've all kind of taken turns. McShane has, and he kept saying, "Oh, I'll be there," and never show up. And so we just sort of brush it off. But I just didn't have much of a connection with him in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after we played together, and we did different things together. But part of it is, you know, I don't think he got married. He didn't have kids. So some of that would bring us together. We'd bring our kids together and do things. So it was unfortunate. I couldn't, you know, I feel bad that I wasn't able to sort of bring him into the fold, because we've all had our experiences trying to do that and get everybody involved. And, you know, Ray knew him the best, because he went to school with him, but he couldn't even do it. And he kept saying, "Oh, yeah, Rob will be here. And he just wouldn't show up.
Mm.
So it's unfortunate, but that's sort of the part of the reason I'm motivated to make sure we all get together, because we're not getting any younger.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So,
That's great.
So I do want to say one thing before you go, because I got to plug my Lonnie Shelton thing.
Yes.
Don't let that the lack that he's not in the Hall of Fame doorway. So if you can ever try to push that I keep trying to bring it to the fold, to the forefront. But I think, you know, some mistakes he made in the past shouldn't haunt him forever.
No.
And I agree. He deserves to be in that Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So I appreciate you letting me get on there and give him that one little plug.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to keep that ball rolling. Scott Spiegelberg and I have talked about it. It's important. Mark Ann Harper in her life and what she meant to all of you. That's a celebration for her tomorrow as well. Tell us about Annie Harper.
Well, and that's another thing, right, in terms of I had a home to come to in Portland. It was an hour and a half away. But if you talk most of the players from out of state, I mean, she was invaluable, even for me. But the things that she would do, the motherly, the nurturing, the love that she gave us. And I felt like it was such an important part, because Ralph was so tough on us that, you know, we needed that warmth in that office. Mm-hmm. And she was always there for us. And when I came back after years and seeing the locker rooms and seeing all these different things with people's names and sort of acknowledgement, I just had to ask her kids, you know, was she ever acknowledged? Did I miss something? And they hadn't told me. I just felt like, you know, we have to show her our appreciation. Mm-hmm. I know she knows it, but I think a collective had to do that. I think it's important. And so I just sort of rallied everybody, and it was an easy thing to rally, that's for sure. So
that's great.
I just started the ball. Ray had talked to the kids, and it just sort of sparked something in me. So Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sweet thing, Ray. Thank you. Thank you for being part of it.
Yeah.
I said we'll close with Pope and the great win last night. Jordan scores 31. That last set, he did it. I mean, that's a thing of beauty. The shot was pure. There were pure shots he made all night. What do you, as a former NBA guy yourself, Mark, and looking at Jordan Pope and what you see from that young man, I mean, give us a sense of your appreciation of his skills.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't lack in confidence. he doesn't right. shy away from the big moments.
Right.
He does have that X factor. I've talked to his brother on several occasions when I see him about his indecisions and things like that. When he's decisive, he's so effective. And so part of that is, you know, his comfort and understanding his role. And that was the epitome yesterday, no question. I mean, the shots and timing. And some of the preseason games, you know, he had big shots. He doesn't shy away from it. So it's something that not everybody has, and it's that X factor. So they're going to need it. But I think the fact that they can be patient with him and allow the game come to him, because you know, and he could be more decisive, is only going to mean more success.
Mark,
I do like his game.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you on the show. We appreciate everything that you're doing behind the scenes and the honoring of Ann and Rob and your experience at Oregon State. We appreciate you sharing of it with us today, Mark, and look forward to seeing you and the guys tomorrow. Thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, thank you, and thank Bill Walton for plugging you a lot yesterday. That was a nice. You got a bunch of plugs from Bill.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but it was nice of him. Yes. Hey, Mark, great talking to you.
Yeah.
We'll see you tomorrow at Gill. Thanks
now.
A lot,
see you tomorrow.
Sir. Mark Radford. Wow, great stuff. He, you know, he was a broadcaster too. You know, he did a lot of games as an analyst
for who?
Well, you know, whatever the networks were called back in the day. I remember watching Radford as an analyst, working with Todd McKim and Bob Akamian and others through the years.
I remember that.
And two things would occur to me. Wow, he's good. And he's a good-looking man. You know, I mean, he looked like if he wasn't doing that, he could be down in Hollywood making his mark.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
how he's always struck me.
Yeah.
But a talented human being, basketball player, great basketball player. But he's been fairly candid about Ralph through the years, too. I mean, there was even in the book, Miller's Time. We'll talk about it when we wrap up the hour.
I was surprised just what he was saying here, because it sounded like we all kind of think, you know, Ralph
yes.
was kind of a gruff, mean, not mean, but just a gruff,
unapproachable
curmudgeon who, you know, a guy would be a little... You don't do the right thing. You look over your shoulder if you're getting the hook. Okay, fine. Those were coaches back then. Sonny Long, Ralph Miller, just Monson, all of them. And militaristic is right, because these guys, maybe not them specifically, but that era came from World War II. And it was, do what you got to do to get the job done. I don't want any excuses, and go run around the poles. So you got this guy, and then and for Jeff Stout, no transition there, because Sonny was the same way, maybe even meaner. But it sounded like, because I know that your generation, me, I'm mm-hmm. only 7 years different, we're a lot tougher. We just had,
well,
you had Phipps ripping on you, I had coaches ripping on me, and they didn't say nice things. I had coaches say horrible things
to
me.
I know.
I didn't buckle
and
wilt.
The thing is, what you're getting at, I think, is, and Radford is essentially saying, yeah, he was kind of mean. You know, it's not like you know, all these years later, well, he had a really heart of gold.
No,
he was tough, and we needed the warmth of Annie to kind of counter. If it weren't for Jimmy, none of us would have come.
Jimmy,
I mean, all of that.
You always have to have the good cop
right.
or the bad cop.
Good stuff from the great Mark Radford. Let's break, wrap up the hour. John Wilner, and maybe we're hoping for Pope at 12:45 today on the Joe Beaver Show.
All right, here we go.
So on the Downward Dog phone line, I will hold that. I think our best opportunity today for open phones would be after the Wilner conversation, as we hope for Pope.
Yeah.
And Pope would be late, if at all, between 12:45 and 12:50. So Dave and anybody else, if you can get to us after the Wilner conversation, that would be the best time. But the University Honda text line, always open, 541-497-5356.
Scott and Tigard says, fantastic interview today with Mark Radford. Thank you for that, Scott and Tiger. All right. Here is a connection to baseball. It's a baseball article about the Beavers that I haven't read yet because it broke not that long ago. It's on OregonLive.com about going independent.
By Joe Freeman?
I'm not sure.
Probably.
It's just a link from the Orange
thank
one.
You.
Another person wrote in, Kyle in Southwest Florida. Kyle actually called once when you were gone. He says, I was like John, asleep before a tip-off. I actually listened the first half.
Because it's 11 o'clock, before second right? half. 11
yeah.
o'clock in
yeah.
Florida.
I was like John, asleep before tip-off. How it was the first thing I checked upon waking, if only I had hit submit bet on that Beaver ML on my betting app.
18 and a half, was it?
Should have had more faith, Kyle.
Was it 18 and a half?
It was 18 and a half, yeah.
It's a big number.
Yeah, they crushed it. Dave and Sandy... Dave says, after listening to a friend discussing her upcoming stem cell treatment, that's very sad, about 11 o'clock last night, I Googled the score, figuring it was an Arizona blowout. I cleared it, then Googled it again.
To make sure he got the right information?
Because I thought my Parkinson's brain was causing me another problem. Nope. The Beavs had won. Then I proceeded to forget the game was last night when I texted Mike this morning. Oh, how life is wondrous, even if it is like the movie Groundhog Day. Great show, guys. Thanks, Dave. Dave's always very supportive.
Yes, he is. Thank you.
CVB, while I understand the kind of expertise is pretty much the only writer that covered the pack as an entity rather than most other writers mm-hmm. who focused on a particular team first and secondary, the organization it's a member of, to me, Wilner, he has had to be brought around to the recognition of the place, legal position, and direction the Beavs and Cougs were able to take hold with confidence. When you and your listeners were way ahead, and I dare say still are due mostly to looking for answers rather than following a national narrative, to his credit, he has come to the realization that the end game is still a way off.
So that's an intriguing position CVB takes, and I get it. I do think because as good as Wilner is and as great of a journalist as he is, and he is, he would not have the same emotional vested interest as all of us would about how this was going to play out. So, therefore, maybe not as deep down into the weeds as we all were, but what should we do? What can we do? What are the options? I do think he was quick to all of that, though, and has been well-sourced and reported. We'll ask John, and that's one of the questions I was already planning CVB on asking John is, okay, if you're writing an article now, 5 months later, about the bad hand played so shrewdly by Washington State and Oregon State, were you a little surprised about how well that hand's been played? What were your thoughts and expectations for the Beavs and Cougs when this whole thing really began to roll? And get him to kind of weigh in, CVB, on coming around, as you say. I think he's always been there, but I do think there's been an element of, they're playing this better than even I thought they would. So we'll get into that with John a little bit. Anything else on the fan?
There's a couple, but we don't have time to get to them.
We appreciate it. We'll have some open phone and open text opportunities after our conversation with one of the great journalists covering sports, particularly in our region and the conference, John Wilner. Coming up next.
The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
Try to remember.
Throw that screen intercepted. Not his way of the house. Touchdown, Beavers.
As we try to recall how things used to be.
The Beavers have recovered a fumble on a flea flicker attempt.
Yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away.
We seek to come to grips with the current state of affairs.
Nobody told me there'd be days like these. Strange days indeed. Strange days indeed.
All the while believing
things could be better than they were today.
As we wait, we invite you to join us for another run of the Joe Beaver Show, where our hearts always remain hopeful.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
And now, here come John and Mike on the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Never has a song resonated more. Here comes the sun. It came in the form of Late Night 3 by Jordan Pope last night, which when I asked for and was certainly... grateful to receive a yes from our next guest, the great John Wilner, who has covered the conference. He and John Canzano have worked it so well together, kept us so informed and apprised of all the developments over the last many years, but in particular, these somewhat anxious-filled months, and John had what I read that provoked me to. We haven't talked to John since after the Beaver San Jose State game, but he began an article recently on the John Wilner Pac-12 Hotline. It's been 21 weeks since they were completely abandoned. 21 weeks since Oregon State and Washington State became the last two fighting for survival, revenue, and relevance. A great opening paragraph. Then he develops the idea that dealt with that bad hand. Washington State and Oregon State have played it shrewdly, very well. We're going to talk to John about it. But as we welcome in John Wilner to the Joe Beaver Show, John, I got to be honest with you. I didn't fully expect to begin with, how about those Beavers and Jordan Pope hitting a three to beat ninth-ranked Arizona? I don't know if you watched it, but you certainly know about it now. What does that tell you about, I guess, about the Beavs, but about the conference and the unexpected nature of what can happen on a road trip to the Willamette Valley?
Yeah, well, you've got a good guard, and if the guard's playing well and you're at home, you've got a shot to beat just about anybody. This conference certainly is not exactly loaded at the top, so there's opportunities for everybody to win at home, especially. That was a terrific win for the Beavers. Great shot by Pope, great game. The fact, you know, that they rallied the way they did. I mean, if you had said to me before the game that Oregon State's going to win, I would have expected Arizona to come out flat because of the game against Oregon on Saturday. And, you know, and the Beavers kind of take control early, hold off Arizona late. I certainly would not have envisioned the opposite trajectory of the game where Oregon State rallied in the second half. That was a great effort by the Beavers.
Yeah, and John, too, as you point out that I've been trying to say, it was a great effort. They shot the lights out better than they really ever have, 12 of 20, 8 of 12 in the second half from the three-point line. But Arizona played well. I mean, it's not as though they were flat or stumbling and fumbling around. I mean, I thought that was a good college basketball game.
It was. It was. Arizona's had some trouble, certainly on the road, and has had some trouble defending guards. And, you know, Pope took advantage of it. So, you know, good for OSU. Now, the thing is, right, if you want to really, I mean, that's a great win, but if you want it to mean something, you kind of have to turn around and beat ASU, right?
Yep.
And get some real momentum and not just have this be a one-off in what is otherwise kind of a disappointing season. They need to, you know, use it as a springboard for a strong finish.
Absolutely. And we look forward to seeing how that indeed will play out tomorrow. Bobby Hurley will bring a team in that just got drilled. He'll have his guys ready to go. It should be another good game tomorrow afternoon. John, what did catch, and I appreciate it, and I mean it, not just because you're on. We talk about you all the time with John. Before we get into the specifics of what I've already alluded to in your opening paragraph, your love for, I'm not sure if that's the right term because you're an objective journalist, a paragon, in fact, of that, but you shared with us years ago, and I'd like to hit it again, because I'm wondering how, with the Pac-2 around now and how the hotline and so on will evolve. But you made a decision years ago to go really deep, go all in on the conference. What predicated that, and what's your plan now going forward?
Well, I mean, that was based on interest level. There was a need, a desire among fans to read more about the Pac-12. And to read about the off-the-field and off-the-court issues that have been so important in shaping what has happened in this conference. You know, those issues aren't going away, right? The Pac-12, you know, is going to be a two-team league for a couple of years. I'm going to continue to write about Washington State and Oregon State, but I'm also going to continue to write about the other schools that are leaving in their new conferences, because the issues that have kind of framed the Pac-12 aren't going away, right? They're going to shape college football, especially over the next 5-10 years. Readers are still interested in, you know, media deals. They're still interested in realignment. They're still interested in, you know, budget shortfalls and fired coaches and all the things that I have written about frequently over the years. None of that's going away just because teams are changing conferences.
John Wilner joining us. Continuing your outstanding piece among many recently, but you wrote, since being cast adrift, the Beavers and Cougars have played their cards exactly right, and you give a couple of examples, and then say, quote, you write this, they took the worst poker hand in the history of college sports and did not fold, and then you quote an industry source saying, quote, they came out of this in as good a position as anyone could have imagined, unquote. John, thank you for writing that. It makes us all feel better because we're all here in our world in the Mid-Willamette Valley, right in the heart of it, reading you, reading John, reading Dennis Dodd, reading all the other people about all of this. But that's the type of column that you have researched out. You're not saying this to placate Beaver Nation or to try to make us feel better. These are things you have apparently found in your research. Tell us a little bit more about that, if you would.
Well, I mean, look, it was a terrible situation for Warren State, Washington State, right? There was no great outcome. Once Cal and Stanford left for the ACC on September 1st, I'm not even sure there was a mediocre outcome. Mm-hmm. But Oregon State and Washington State have maximized the opportunity as well as anybody could have envisioned. And the main thing to me, and the thing that I keep hearing from folks not affiliated with those schools or at the Pac-12, is that they've remained flexible. You know, keeping their options open because nobody knows what college football is going to look like in 10 years, but even in 2 or 3 years. And the foundation of Washington State and Oregon State's strategy is to have as many options available as possible in case something significant happens, right? I mean, we don't know. The ACC could implode in 6 months. If Florida State successfully challenges the contract, then other schools are going to leave and the ACC is going to fall apart, right? If the NCAA loses this multi-billion-dollar lawsuit, that's going to cause a huge change in the economic model that could force a restructuring of the conferences. There's a lot of things out there that Washington State and Oregon State are kind of waiting. They're tracking everything, and they're going to, you know, if they need to rebuild the Pac-12 in 2 years, I think they're prepared to do that. If there's an opportunity to join another league, I think they're prepared to do that. And that's all you could really ask if you're a fan, is to keep as many options open as possible.
John Wilner, our guest. John Warren here with Mike Parker. A couple of questions looking back and moving forward. First, being as close as you are to covering the league and being right there in the Bay Area for so many years, were you surprised? Was this a shock? Did you see this coming, say, a year ago now?
Did I see what?
All of what has happened since August, yeah.
I mean, once USC and UCLA left on June 30th, 2022, this outcome was certainly on the range of possibilities. I thought all along that the more likely outcome is that they'd find us, the 10 schools would stick together, but it was never, in my opinion, it was never a done deal until they actually signed a contract, because there was a lot of obstacles out there. Many of them internal, I might add, of the Pac-12's own doing. Mm-hmm. But I never thought that it was a done deal, that everything was going to be fine.
So then moving forward on some of those things you touched on, and we're all watching the ACC and the Florida State case and other things. I mean, I know we all just have opinions on it, but do you have a prediction on what you think might happen in the next 2 or 3 years?
Boy, it's tough. 2 or 3 years, I don't know. I would say that by the end of the decade, I think college football is going to have a super league with the top 24, 30 schools, and then everybody else is going to essentially reform around regional conferences. I think that there's a pretty good chance that there will be a Pac-14, Pac-16, a decade from now, in which a bunch of the schools that have left come back. because, you know, really, if you're talking about a Super League, Oregon, Washington, and USC are really the only schools that they kind of fit. Mm-hmm. So for everybody else, I think there's a chance that they, you know, they may need a new home eventually. But that could happen a lot earlier than 2030. If the ACC collapses, if the NCAA loses that lawsuit, all those things are going to put pressure on the system, and all those things are going to make the, you know, the Ohio States and Alabamas and Georgias say, you know what, we're better off doing our own thing. And the TV networks that basically run the sport are going to be willing to pay top dollar for those schools. But, you know, the days of Fox paying the same for the Minnesota-Illinois game as they pay for Michigan-Ohio State, those days are over.
Mm, yeah, sadly, I believe you're right. Question about Cal and Stanford, being close to them as well. Was it a panic move, what they did, to not accept any money to go and eschew Oregon State and Washington State's pleas to stick around? Because it just seems like in every aspect of it, other than being under the umbrella of a conference, every other aspect of that move was dumb.
Well, I think that they were, put it this way, I don't think those two schools were prepared for the Pac-12 to collapse. Was it a panic move? I don't know if it was a panic move, but I don't know that it was necessarily the right move for a couple reasons. And the reason they did it, one of the key reasons they did it, is they wanted their Olympic sports teams to be able to compete at the highest level. And they felt in the ACC, and the ACC's got great Olympic sports, that was a way to achieve that goal. But certainly there are some issues with their decision, and one of those issues is they have locked themselves into a 12-year contract in the ACC, and for most of those years they are getting much less revenue than their competitors. So they are in a tough spot. There's no doubt about that. We'll wait and see what happens. You know, the ACC could lose a couple top schools but still exist, and in that case, Cal and Stanford are basically in a much depleted league 3,000 miles away from home.
Yeah, yeah. A few more minutes with John Wilner, Pac-12 Hotline column extraordinaire through the years, and in particular over what you wrote, John, over these five roiling months. Roiling's an underrated word. I like roiling. But you're right. And you said, in opposite of what John just asked you about, you wrote, there's one thing the Beavers and Cougars did not do. They did not commit to anything or anyone beyond the next two seasons, so left their options open, as you've already talked about. I'm curious to know, John, are you a little taken aback and surprised by, in a sense, how well the Bees and Cougs have played their hand and the position they're now in, with respect to maybe Cal, Stanford, and others, a little surprised by it? I don't know what your expectation was, but it seemed like a lot of national people just thought, okay, they'll fall into the Mountain West, and here we go, and that's it. So what do you make of the position and how the Beavers and Cougs have gotten to where they are? Were you expecting them to play the hand so well, I guess?
Boy, it's tough to say. I'm not surprised that they made smart decisions because they got smart people. You know, Scott Barnes at Oregon State and Pat Shon at Washington State really are good strategic thinkers and have their, you know, understand the dynamics that are moving college sports forward. I think it was the legal issue, right? The governance of the conference, access to the assets and revenue, those things are all crucial to them being able to remain flexible, right? I mean, that if they had lost that lawsuit, the situation would be a lot different, and, you know, maybe their strategy wouldn't look quite as smart. But certainly, I'm not surprised that those two schools made good decisions, and you know, I have no reason to think that that's not going to continue to be the case moving forward. But to a certain degree, you know, they are susceptible to external forces, and some of those are very unpredictable.
Yeah, and John, do you think the other 10 schools were a little surprised or taken aback at how this has played out? Was there an assumption, maybe not a fully thought through in these unprecedented times by other schools about, well, they will just capitulate and join the Mountain West and the conference will dissolve and fold? Do you think a lot of people thought that was going to be the outcome?
You know, I can't speak to what the presidents of the 10 schools thought, but I know in talking to the athletic directors, you know, that they all, there's a narrative that the athletic departments at the other 10 are against Washington State Oregon State. And I have not talked to a single AD in any of those 10 schools that isn't rooting for the Beavers and Cougars to succeed. And it doesn't feel bad about what has happened. But at the same time, you ask them, and they'll say, well, we had to do what was best for us, our school, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So do I think, I don't know what the schools thought the Cougars and Beavers were going to do. I'm not sure that they really gave it a whole lot of thought mm-hmm. because,
right.
they, you know, on August 4th, there was a lot of quick decisions that had to be made by Oregon, Washington, and then, the three corner schools.
What do you expect from a media rights deal? As we, the last couple of things, John, we could talk forever with you, but what is your sense of the home game rights for the Cougs and Beavs? What value there may be in there, and what do you think they're going to do with the Pac-12 network infrastructure, et cetera?
Well, I don't know. The media value to me is not going to be very high, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about, what is it, 6 or 7 games for each school over the course of 2 years. They don't have any leverage. The primary broadcast windows on ESPN and Fox are all accounted for already. But the biggest thing to me is it's not about money. They've got enough money to get through the next 2 years. It's about visibility. Mm-hmm. They cannot be forgotten, right? A key to their strategy is to be available. And to be available in case something happens in a few years, you got to be on the radar. And I think that, you know, if they've got a chance, well, you know, if there's an offer, say, I'm just throwing out them. Mm-hmm. If there's an offer for $1 million a game, but it's in a bad window or a series of bad windows versus $750,000 a game, mm-hmm. but we're going to get you many more eyeballs, they need to take the eyeballs,
yeah.
right? The difference in value is not going to be big enough to offset the importance of being visible.
The one thing that Trent Bray and the Beavers can do is make the 12-team playoff. You know?
Yeah.
And then that enhances that value in the next year, and I would assume thereafter.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, though, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a tough haul for both teams, right?
I agree.
And that's the rosters. The schedules are pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're going to, I would imagine that both teams end up playing by the end of next season, both teams will have played 5 or 6 bowl-eligible teams.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to win, and neither roster is set up. Yeah, put it this way. Neither roster is nearly as good as what Oregon State's roster was before the 2023 season.
True.
Right?
Yeah. True.
I think we're looking at anywhere from 8-4 to 5-7 for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's just not going to get it cut it for the playoffs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you like, last thing, John, we'll turn you loose after this. Do you like the WCC affiliate membership deal that the Cougs and Beavs have found? And baseball, you know enough about Beaver baseball. It's sort of unique in this landscape, how good they are. You like the route they're going to try to operate as an independent?
I do, but I don't want to offend anybody when I say this. Bottom line is that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, for the next 2 years,
I understand.
This is
yeah.
all about football. And the best product the two schools can put together on the field, the best options they have for their football teams moving forward. The WCC affiliation is very smart, but it is far down mm-hmm. the list, in my opinion, of you know what those two schools need to have happen over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
In order to secure their futures.
It sounds to me like they can't do anything to sell themselves for a future conference or anything. It just has to be that enough change occurs in the next 2 years that they're needed rather than wanted.
Yeah, I mean, they need to, you know, the better they are in football, the better, the more that helps.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. But they need either the ACC to implode or the ACC or the Big 12 to decide, you know what, we don't like our construction. We need mm-hmm. either if it's the ACC, we need two more West Coast schools, or if it's the Big 12, we need to get to 18 schools. I mean, they need something in one of those two conferences
right.
to kind of jar people to think, you know, we need to add them, or they need the ACC to implode, or they need, you know, the NCAA to create this subdivision, or they need the NCAA to lose that multi-billion-dollar lawsuit. They need, like, a shock to the system to create another round of movement in which they can be involved.
Yeah, and have a place. John, you, as always, we appreciate your time, your insight, knowledge, and perspective, access. We love the work you've done over the years, and we look forward to continuing to read it. Thanks for making time for the Joe Beaver Show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, John. John Wilner. Now, them's fighting words as we go to break about that stuff doesn't matter. You know, here we, I get what John's getting. That's why I say I understand. I quickly came in with when he says that's basketball, baseball, all the other sports. That's not, you may say and take great issue with it. You know what I mean? What do you mean it doesn't
right.
matter? Baseball's our, you know, our most successful sport, or what, a 3 national championship. Yeah. And we love it. And it is vitally important to the fabric and soul of everything that Oregon State University represents and does. But when, from John's perspective, writing about these, the tectonic, the movement of the plates and the landscape and all of that, he's saying that all of those things and the other sports and all that, more power to you. Go, man, go and win big and win at a level that makes the programs vitally important to Beaver Nation. But he's talking about the big picture stuff in the college football landscape. And it's about college football driving it all. That's what John Wilner said. And you may not like him saying none of that stuff matters, which he said. And he's wrong, because it matters on a certain level. But by comparison to what he's talking about, the Beavers' future hinges on what happens in football.
Yeah. And that's hard to argue with on the grand scale of things.
We'll take a break. Mike, hang in. Dave, this would be a good time, if you're listening, to give us a call and share your experiences with the nonpareil, Bill Walton. Dave and I visited a little bit yesterday as Dave was making his way back from Tumwater after the one-on-one with Walton, and I found what Dave said very interesting about his interlocutor, a man by the name of Bill Walton, and what they talked about and the questions Bill asked. So, Dave, this would be a good time to call now. Mike's up first. Anybody else would like to join us as we hope for Pope to close the show? 497-5356, 497-5356. Thanks for joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. It's Tur.
Yeah.
Just got a text from Roberto. We're still hoping for Jordan Pope to close the show, maybe the last few minutes. I just want to get him on to say thank you, man. Congratulations. Was a transcendent game.
I just want to hear you say hope for Pope.
Yeah, well, hope for Pope in the next few minutes. In the meantime, Mike in Dogtown and then Dave in Tumwater. Let's go to Mike right here in Corvallis. Dogtown, Mike. Mike, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Chris and I were at the game last night.
Cool.
You know me, I'm friends with Coach, and I would never miss a game. And we thought, you don't know what's going to happen. You didn't know. We got there. Our seats are behind, in the second level, behind the Arizona bench, and we were surrounded by Arizona fans.
Yep.
Behind me was the young man who does the analytics for Oregon. His dad's in Arizona. Fan lives in Arizona, so we were in the middle of them. And I'll tell you what, you know, and I get a great story about Coach Miller. To be able to know about Beaver basketball over the years and to watch that game last night, and the only analogy I can tell you is to watch the blood drain from the face of those Arizona fans that surrounded us was priceless.
Yeah.
They were very, very supportive of the team, almost kind of cocky, but they're not. They were great sports. I talked to a few of them there. But you could just tell the energy, and you could tell with our team and tell that these young guys, you know, the confidence start building. And when Pope came down and made that last shot, just to watch the look on the Arizona fans' face was priceless.
You know, Mike, you say that, and they've seen it a few times now. That's the thing. Arizona, I can see these longtime Arizona fans who've ran roughshod a lot of times over the Beavers and most teams, and I've seen one win in McHale Center in 25 years. I mean, I know what it's like, and I've seen the Beavers get blown out. Even the year the Beavers went to the Elite Eight, they lost Arizona at Gill that year, 90-64, and then rebounded and got it going and get to the Elite Eight. But that they've been drubbed a lot by Arizona. But on the other side of it, longtime Arizona fans, as John, you were getting at earlier, have this sense of, and I'm sure last night, kind of early, it was almost, it's going to be another one of those games. I don't know if we're going to win or not. And here are the Beavers at the end on the Pope shot to win it. And they've experienced that now a few times over the years.
Yeah, you can see it on their face. You can see it coming. I can actually, was watching all around us every time that a big shot was made. Or and what I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, though, that Arizona tried and missed several dunks that were deflected on defense, which was very impressive to me to watch. Our guys deflect some of those dunks.
Yes.
Some of those dunks were missed because of defense.
Right. Yeah, and they got a little full of themselves, maybe. Like, okay, well, I'm just going to come and follow this and throw it down, like Walton says. Throw it down, big man. So they thought maybe they could just kind of impose their will and do what they wanted to. And I think some of those missed dunk follow attempts and flying dunk attempts were ill-advised when if they just would have gone with a more, okay, I'm going to put the ball back in the hole here. But I think they thought, hey, we're Arizona. We can do whatever we want. And I think it cost them a little bit at times.
I think exactly that, and I can see it building in the fans' face around us. And exactly what you're saying is, some of the fans who were around us had looked like they'd been fans for a long time, and they were going, "Oh no, we've experienced this in the past."
Yeah.
And it was so fun to be part of that, and the energy. I was a student when Coach Miller was there, and then when Gary Payton, I got a picture of Gary Payton. That had him sign his 3 seconds left on the clock, and he's beating UCLA, shoots a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Miller, like Coach Jack Riley, oh my goodness. Coach Jack Riley, my coach, I actually took a basketball class with Coach Miller, and everybody was intimidated, and I was older. I was 27 at the time, as an older student, and I took a class from him, and I had an all key. Because the baseball had an all key to get into Gill whenever. And me and my buddy Terry Stevenson in baseball would go up and watch basketball practice at the second level. And we would see Coach Miller look up and say, what are these guys doing here? And I took a class from him, and he was very, very abrupt. And
yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, Mike, if I had a question, and I'm the one, I'm going to talk to people, I would ask him after class about this, and he would always address you by your last name. Alan, it's not that tough. The last is not that hard. What's hard about it, And he actually gave me time. He actually gave me the time, but it's funny, during practice, he called your name out. He yoked your last name sitting there with that coffee cup and that stick in his hand.
Yep.
Man, everything just died.
Absolutely. A beauty, a true beauty, and a classic of a coach and a person. And I liked Radford's stories, who didn't, Mark didn't go the route of, well, he was really kind-hearted, and, you get beyond the server. I mean, he just said he was tough. He was tough and kind of mean, and you didn't know whether you liked you or not. But I do think the guys who played for him all did understand, A, he did deep down. He did. He cared. Jimmy was that perfect buffer between the two, but Ralph was a master teacher, and Beaver basketball rose to number one in the country because of that.
Well, Coach Valenti was there too. So
yes.
I got a letter of recommendation from Coach Valenti, and he was also kind of a buffering factor along with Jimmy. And, Coach Jack Riley was really that way, and I forgot one time. We all helped. During baseball, not like that. We all helped. So I had the gate list in my hand for the parents. I left it on the dash. I helped my buddy Sandy Sandago, who was the head trainer. Mm-hmm. We were getting stuff on the field. I forgot the gate list on the dash, and oh my goodness, I got ripped by Coach Riley and ripped bad in front of everybody. I never did it again. But Mrs. Riley is the sweetheart. I love her to death. She's followed my kids all the way through at OSU. There's five of us now that's graduated. And Coach Riley, about 4 or 5 years ago, started coming back more to the baseball game.
Yeah.
Actually, Mike, I sat down. He grabbed my hand, held onto my hand while he talked to me for about 15 minutes. This is a guy that was, you know, like Coach Miller. And he said, man, am I glad to see you. And I thought to myself afterwards, John Sipple, our pitcher, I said, and he held onto my hand and talked to me the whole time.
Yeah.
And we laughed about it.
Hey, Mike, we got to go. It's good to hear from you and your stories. Thanks for making time. I'm glad you were there last night. Tumwater wasn't at the game. He lives in Tumwater, as we well know. And so to do a Beaver basketball game at 8, drive to Tumwater thereafter. But he came down early for business around campus and met other friends, had lunch in Salem, and then made his way to Gill. And during the Beavers shoot around, with kind of a receiving line always for Bill, Dave patiently waited because Bill said, is he got time? I'll talk to him later. I had to leave. I couldn't wait it out, Dave, but you stayed. I'm glad you had a chance to meet maybe your biggest fan right now, based on what I heard last night on the telecast that I went back and listened to. Well-deserved praise from Bill Walton himself for your books, and you had a great conversation. So please share with us a little bit how that all went and what your thoughts were watching the game last night.
Well, thanks, guys. By the way, am I coming through clearly? Because
yes.
You're a little garbled on my end.
You sound fine.
Okay, good. Well, it was a glorious afternoon. I need, Mike, a whole Walton-esque 50 minutes.
Yes.
I know I don't have it, but I could use it because I was able to talk to Pat Cagey as well. Had some Harvardians going over at St. Mary's. I got to meet Coach Tinkle.
Yep.
And we reminisced, if that's the right word, about that dark day in Omaha when Oregon State fans had to kind of form a guard around the Oregon State bullpen when Luke Heimlich was warming up. And Coach was right in the thick of that. And we're talking about Tumwater football. But the highlight, of course, was the conversation with Bill Walton. A couple of summary impressions. The guy is a lot, he's kind of quiet and kind of reserved. I mean, you'd never get that impression from his on-air persona when he calls into your show. But we had a great conversation. He asked me, first the thing he asked me, how did you get to be friends with Mike Parker? And I said, well, if you call it the same radio show 4 or 5 times a week for 10 years, you kind of get to know a guy.
Right.
And he kind of struck his fancy. But he asked me how I first got interested in Lewis and Clark. I said, well, I was the head of the State Historical Society in Washington. The bicentennial of the expedition was coming about. I thought the story needed a new interpretation. And before I could say another word, guys, he says, you've rewritten that whole story. Which, of course, was partly my intention. There's some controversial takes in that book, but Bill, he liked it. In fact, in typical hyperbole, he says, you've changed my life. Now, you guys were talking in the first hour about how Bill is prone to exaggeration. What he meant to say, of course, was that book changed his perception
right.
of the Lewis and Clark story.
Right.
And he asked, I gave him the book. I inscribed it along the lines that I described separately. And he said, he asked me a very good question. He said, well, I'm just about to finish River of Promise. I've got the cookbook. Now you've given me Lewis and Clark reframed. He asked a very good question. Which book should I read next? I told him he should read Captain Cook. It kind of fills the backstory. And then the book I gave him yesterday is kind of a synthesis. It'll wrap it all up. And then I said, Bill, I've got another book coming out in the spring that I'm hoping to do a roadshow around, by the way. I'm working with Dougie.
Thank you.
About that. And he says, well, what's the title of that book? And he says, I told him it's Discovering Nothing. And he kind of smiled at me. He said, I need a little bit more explanation. And I don't know how much time we got, but this just gives an insight into how quick a read, how quick a study Bill Walton is. Because I said, well, the Discovering Nothing's the sequel to Cook, the history of the Northwest Passage, It's a search for it from the Pacific side of the continent. I said, you know, Captain Cook looked for the ocean-to-ocean version in the high latitudes, couldn't find it. I said, but the idea was had such a hold that the idea emerged that there was an analog to Hudson Bay from the Pacific side of the continent, and that created a little land bridge in the center of the continent about where Manitoba is. And so the thought was that could form a Northwest Passage. And before I could finish the sentence, Bill says, well, that wasn't there either. I said, precisely, because that wasn't there, Bill. The idea emerged of creating a network of lakes and rivers across the continent that would serve as a replacement for the saltwater solution. And that's what Lewis and Clark were about. And again, before I could finish the sentence, he says, and they could not find that either. Mm-hmm. I said, exactly right. And the point I made to you last night, Mike, in my preview of this, and for your benefit, I have given hour-long lectures with benefit of 8, 10, 12 historic maps, explained it in detail, and I've had people at the end of that not grasp at the end of my best efforts in an hour's time to explain how the Northwest right. Passage wasn't a single thing but a series of things. Bill got that in 90 seconds of dialogue.
Isn't that interesting? You know, Jack Ramsey used to say, somebody once criticized Bill about something or other, and Jack just said, stop right now. Bill Walton understands the game of basketball better than any person I've ever been around. Whatever you say about him, you can't say that he didn't understand. You know, he's the best in terms of understanding the game than anybody I've ever been around. And so, you know, I think that speaks to the quickness, right, Dave? Of Jack saying that about him and the sport of basketball, but it also has translated into other fields, it sounds like.
No question. He said he told me he wished he had more time to read. We talked about how many books he's going through, and this travel works against that. It was. Let's just say, in summary, it was a vivid, entirely memorable conversation. And because I was reluctant to ask for a photograph, maybe he read the situation again. Now we're talking about emotional intelligence. He says, here. And he got one of the Pac-12 crew, says, here, take Dave's phone, take a picture of us out here. And he's so practiced. So he said, no, turn this way. And he kind of puts his arm around
yes.
me.
Yes.
And he kind of positions us. The basketball hoop is in the background.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, nonpareil. You're right, Mike. That describes it perfectly.
Yeah. Dave, great to talk to you. Let's do it. We'll have more conversations, I dare say, in the next week and the weeks ahead. Wilner, I thought, was good today, too. I know you read him all the time, and there was nothing revelatory, per se, but I thought he summed things up well.
No, I agree. I think we've had that. I agree with John's year three hypothesis, but I think somewhere in Wilner's column, he said something, 2 years, given the pace of events, is like a decade. There's a lot of water to go over the dam. Or under the bridge, whatever your metaphor, before this plays out. I like Oregon State and Washington State's chances. I'll send you a picture of me and Bill.
Please.
You'll note that he's got a tie-dye Pac-12 shirt on. I have an orange Pac-2 shirt on.
Beautiful.
I'll ship it to you at the end of this call.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Good talking to you.
I've actually changed my thoughts based off of, sort of Wilner's article and saying, we don't need to know so much about year three,
right?
Because we got to wait. Now, maybe after this year, going into the second year, we might want to know what's going to happen in year three. But there's so many different things that can happen.
And I think he comes down on the point. We're going to go to Dave before we break, and we're still waiting for the Pope line to ring. If it does, when the Pope calls, you answer. We'll see what happens. But leaving the options open, not committed, not rushing and panicking into something. The Beavers have some flexibility here.
Which, you know, a few months ago they didn't because of the Florida State situation.
And now they went and winning the court case and winning the governing board and control of the assets. So it's still not a great hand, but they've played the bad hand as best as possible to give them some options as things perhaps change again. Dave, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mike, I watched a lot of the game last night. I was out, but left with about 5 minutes left, and so I got in the truck and turned on the radio. So I got the pleasure of listening to your call for the last 4 minutes. And I just want to say, it's great that we won the game, but listening to the way you called that, you know, I was just, when Pope got fouled at the three-pointer,
yeah.
Here comes Pope up to the line to attempt a hat trick. To bring that term in, and I haven't heard many other people do that, to bring that hockey term into the basketball court. Oh, and he's made the first one, and he's made the second one. He's stepping up to see if he can complete the hat trick. And he's done it, and the Beavers are back up. So, you know, at the end of the game, the way he described that whole thing, Pope bringing it up to court, he dribbles to his left, step back, shoots, makes it, Beavers win. You know, of course, a little bit more gusto. You know, one of the more enjoyable calls that I've heard you make.
Thank you, man.
The way you presented that. And then you just stopped and you let that linger like a lot of good, you know, especially baseball calls, right? You don't see the football.
No, and I did that. Dave, I made a conscious decision and the Beavers win. I laid out for a bit, you know, partly because the voice, you know, as you could hear, croaked a little bit there at the end, trying to hit the last high note, so to speak. But I loved the sound of the crowd and the joy that was beginning to unfold in front of me. And I did try to let it breathe a little bit because I needed to breathe a little bit, but it was fun to watch that all unfold.
It was. It was the way you let that just breathe. It was almost like that Kirk Gibson home run call, right? You just got to go silent and let the crowd take over, sweet sound. It was. You know, and I'm not going to say a whole lot about the team other than, number one, for some reason, Wayne's teams have always had trouble winning on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like we're at that point again this year. But they've also got some great talent and some guys that can really put some numbers up and compete. And they proved it last night. And they proved it against Washington State when they should have won that game and had Stanford on the ropes, too.
Right.
I mean, we could be looking at a four-win team easily instead of what they are. So, you know, for anybody who's out there criticizing it and down on it, you know, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to go on the road. And if that's the product they bring at home, then it'll sell tickets either way.
True. That was a very high-level, well-played, entertaining basketball game last night. No doubt, Dave. Dave, we've got to take a final break here, and hope for Pope. Thanks for the kind words, and thanks for listening, Dave. Final break, quick bit of business, and we're going to look and look. I'm looking like Maury Amsterdam right now, trying to raise the level.
A watched phone never rings.
I know, but we're going to watch that Pope line and see if the Pope calls. Hope for Pope for a final few minutes just to say, Jordan, thank you and congratulations. But we'll see on the Joe Beaver Show. The last few minutes, I don't think, how dare they? How dare they go long with their scouting report? I was told after practice they would look at film and there was a thought that it might be over by 12:45 or 12:50. Roberto keeping me posted on the events. Can't I just call and interrupt? Scouting report, come on, we got to get Jordan Pope on the Joe Beaver Show. I'm not sure we're going to get him, but if we get him, we'll see the line light up and just say, hey, great job, kid. In the meantime, we're going to hear from Paul in our last few minutes. Women's hoops tonight. We're hoping. How about sweeping the weekend? Let's go, man. Go. The great win last night. The women tonight in a huge showdown with a great Colorado team. I think this is the Beavers' opportunity again to continue the momentum they're building and going forward and rising in the polls and in the national consciousness. Tomorrow afternoon, 4:00, 3:30 airtime, honoring Ann Harper. Honoring the 63 Final Four team, a lot of tremendous former Beaver players coming back. Hope you get your tickets and come out. Sunday, noon, the Beaver women against Utah. The Diamond Dinner tonight, a little baseball news. It confirms or ratifies what we've been talking about in terms of independence for 2025. So we'll get the official statement here in a moment on that from Scott Barnes and what John is you know, it's been released and it's official. But in the meantime, Paul, good afternoon. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Oh, good afternoon, Mike. Hey, the one thing I noticed last night about Arizona, every time they made a cross-court pass, it was always way too high and offline, and the receiver had to come down facing away from the basket or facing towards the end line and couldn't just come down with the basketball and shoot, which gave our guy time to get over there and defend him.
Hmm.
I mean, their passes were way off.
It's a good point, and you're right about the shooting, catching and shooting aspect. They're a 37% three-point shooting team, which is pretty good, but they were 3 of 14 last night, and they weren't in great position a lot of times because of what you're talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Their passing was way off compared to ours, so we were a huge beneficiary of that.
Yeah, good point, Paul. Great to see you there last night. It was a tremendous atmosphere, wasn't it? Gil was pulsating alive last night.
Oh, my God. I think that's the first time I've ever yelled at a basketball game.
Good for you. Do it again tonight. Cheer the Beavers on to another win. Thanks for the call, Paul. I could. You imagine making the – Dad, I'm going to be in a play opening at the Albany Civic Theater. Oh, really? Who are you playing? Jordan Baker? Well, that's not Daisy. I got a dinner and a basketball game. Those are huge events, the Diamond Dinner and the women's basketball game. But you know where I got to be, and I'm going to be there tonight. Watching Lydia in her debut at the Albany Civic Theater. There are other people. Well, there's other dates. No, this is opening night. You don't replicate that.
No.
So I'll be there, but I'll miss out on the
not
dinner.
Not even a question.
Of course not. I'll miss out on the dinner and the women's game, but we'll be looking for good news when we come out of the play. I'm going to go immediately to 1240 at Joe Radio and Ron Callen with a call and hope and believe we're going to get good news on tonight's game against an outstanding Colorado team. Ron with the call at 6:30 tomorrow. Really looking forward to tomorrow as well. Final Four, Jim Jarvis, Mel Counts, Jeff Stout. I don't think I've ever met Jeff Stout.
I haven't, and I watched him play high school basketball.
I look forward to seeing him tomorrow. He's coming with Ray and Mark and the people we've been honored to have on the show during the week. Steve Johnson will be back, Andy McCloskey.
Great outside shooter in Stout, man. That guy
could
hit from anywhere.
Oh, my gosh, he could. The three-point line, how would he have done?
He would have done very well, very well.
You know, those teams would have played a little differently, as my own coach, Tom Phipps. Parker might play a little differently.
No, don't tell me that.
But Ralph, and he was slow. Certain coaches were slow to embrace. And even the NBA, which is now almost nothing but three-point hoists, it took a while for the NBA to kind of come around and how best to use the three-point line, the volume shooters and the number of three-point shooters. I mean, there's always been guys that could shoot and take advantage of it, but it's taken a long time for the NBA to get to the place they are now, where that's the key to people's offenses, the number of threes taken and made. So, Johnny, we're down
I can't find it because I don't know how to do Twitter.
What was the statement?
The statement by Scott Barnes was announcing that in 2025 now, one more year out, Oregon State Baseball will go independent. With the part of the quote about wanting to remain with the best competition.
Yes.
And there was a statement from Casey as well.
Oh, okay.
So
part of that.
Look
release
that up,
of the statement.
And again, independent for the next 2 years for Beaver Baseball.
And that's a great plan. John Wilner notwithstanding, it does matter. It matters to all of us. John, you know, speaking about football, and it drives everything, and he's right. We've had a great week. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.